Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to a Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our sisters, our programs, our center, or about social justice. Today, my visitor is Sister Elizabeth Davis. Sister Elizabeth, a warm welcome to our radio program.
Thank you very much.
Sister Elizabeth Davis is presently the Congregational Leader of the Sisters of Mercy of Newfoundland and Labrador in Canada. She was originally trained as a high school teacher, but then became Executive Director of St. Clair's Mercy Hospital in St. John's, Newfoundland, and founding President and CEO of the Healthcare Corporation of St. John's. Among many other commitments as chairperson and board member, she is pursuing doctoral studies in scripture at the University of Toronto, Canada. All correct, sister?
All correct.
She is currently visiting friends in New Zealand and giving presentations mainly to Sisters of Mercy. And one of the presentations I went to was last Friday. It was about leadership and about what is the primary role of leaders today, because leadership is a large role and you are a leader in many different walks of life. And so the topic was the primary role. How come that you discuss about this topic?
It's amazing how many people actually are interested in this topic, individuals and organizations. And the group who invited me here, the Sisters of Mercy of New Zealand, are particularly interested in this topic because they have so many places where they minister in New Zealand, in Samoa and Tonga, that they want to make sure that their leaders today are making a difference. The reality is we're very blessed to live in a complex time. And that means every single one of us is a leader in some way or some place or another. When we think about how many small groups we belong to or how many large groups we belong to, we probably, any one of us, can identify 10, 15, 20 communities in which we live and breathe and love and enjoy every day. And in every one of them, we have a different kind of leadership role. But all of us, I think, deep down, every single one of us knows that somehow our world needs to be a better world, that our world is not yet a world of peace and justice. We have so many things, though, so many learnings that are coming to us to help us actually make better worlds, make our worlds more peaceful and more just. We're living in a time, for the very first time in the history of humanity, that we understand that human beings are part of a much bigger creation, not better than the rest of the creation. We have a unique role in that creation, but so does every individual part. That we belong to what I would call the sacred community of all creation. That's a very different sense of who we are as humans than we used to have. We thought we were Lord and Master of the earth. We could do what we wanted. In actual fact, we're guests of this earth. And I'm afraid we behave in terrible ways sometimes. I often think that if the guests came into my home and behaved the way I behave on this earth, I'd put them out. But God is much more gracious and forgiving than I would be.
And we are called to be stewards.
We're very much called to be stewards. But not only stewards. We're called to be one of the most famous rabbis talks about, to be cantors of the universe. I think our unique gift is that we can reflect on the fact that God has created all creation. God has called into being and continues to call into being all creation. And God calls us to be co-creators. And that is so much more affirming and rich than our sense of being the Lord and Master.
What do you think it's meant with co-creators?
Co-creating is about making sure in every one of those communities we are, that we are making those communities better. That when we leave a place, We should only be satisfied if we can say, that place was better because I walked there. That place was better because we walked there. That can sound somewhat naive or idealistic, but it's not really. One of the second learnings of our time, actually, is that diversity is gift. An American theologian, Elizabeth Johnson, says, the dignity of difference is a source of blessing. Now, I have to confess, I tend to like people who think like me, who act like me. And for me to see that diversity is gift, diversity is a blessing. Diversity, properly nurtured, is a way to make our world more peaceful and more just. That's a new kind of thinking for us. And yet, when we look at the world around us, we know the more biodiverse our earth is, the healthier it is.
It's like the food, and the more diverse your food is, the more healthier you live.
Exactly. And yet, when we look at organizations where the leaders all think the same and act the same, then we shouldn't be surprised if these organizations are not healthy. How do we find ways to make sure that we have diverse groups all the time who lead, that we have diverse groups all the time who help form and shape and educate? Not easily done. And yet, how much richer we are when we do that. One of the things that has most impressed me since I came to this beautiful country of New Zealand, my very first time coming, is the many steps you're taking here to reflect and respect your biculturality, the fact that you are descended from both a Maori culture and a European culture, how you have a treaty that enshrines that, and that you're learning to work into that treaty. Even though it's a very old treaty, you're still learning to work into it. I would even say you're daring now, maybe, to work into that. And that becomes then the context in which multicultural living happens. And you're quite multicultural in your society as well. I come from Canada, where we're far from reaching the stage you have reached.
Especially you are from Newfoundland. That's quite European-based, isn't it?
It is. And the first thing we did when we came as Europeans is the existing peoples who lived there already, we wiped them out, sadly, both by our disease and by war. More by disease, I suspect. The Beothuk. So we live with the sadness of that memory. But we also have very vibrant indigenous groups who continue to live among us. On the island of Newfoundland itself, we have the Mi'kmaq. And then in Labrador, we have Innu and Inuit. And we're learning very slowly, not as quickly as you are here in New Zealand. We're learning very, very slowly how to be a society that values that indigenous tradition and learns to really integrate it into our way of understanding the world and living in this world.
And in many places in the world, you have more than one culture. And even in those regions where you think it's only one culture, the historic background can be quite different.
Oh, very much so, yes. To say European is in itself saying something that's not accurate, isn't it?
Yes.
I remember attending a conference where people were talking about the most common language on earth, and somebody in the group said Chinese is the most common language on earth, and a person from China said, do you know how many Chinese languages there are? To suggest there's one Chinese language is itself so missing the point. So you're right, even our European culture, where I come from, it's mostly English, Irish, and Scottish descent. And each of those three groups are so distinct one from the other.
I think that even if you have one culture, like I can talk from the German culture, you have so many different dialects. And in the many different dialects, there are words that are specific to only that dialect. Exactly. And you might not have a word to express that in another dialect.
Exactly.
So the richness is if you understand the words of these other dialects, that enriches your own language.
Very much. And what we're learning about language, of course, we used to think language simply described reality. Now we know that language shapes reality. So yes. The more we understand how the language actually reflects the culture and shapes the culture. It's not simply a way of communicating the way we would have thought in the past.
I remember that one word that you were mentioning at the talk was the word boss.
Yes.
Many people are using the word boss, but what does it mean? Is it a brand or is it a name? Or can you repeat what you said at because I thought it was really good.
We were talking in the context of the presentation about diversity. And one of the diversities among us, of course, is generational. Countries like Canada and New Zealand have the richness of having six different generations alive at the same time. That's not true for every country on earth. It's true for our two countries, where we have each of those six generations is formed with different values. So the oldest generations born, the two generations born before 1945, were born in the shadow of the First World War. Your Anzac Day tomorrow reminds us of the power of that war and the suffering and pain of that war. The Great Depression, the Second World War. So people from those two generations very much value order, clarity about who gives direction, who has authority. My generation, born after the Second World War, we were born into more and more affluence. We're an incredibly selfish generation. The generation after us, what we call nowadays Generation X, are the first generation to have their mothers work, more mothers work outside the home than remained in the home. First generation to have computers in their classrooms. After that, Generation Y, again, a generation where the computer is part and parcel of your way of life. Then the millennials, born at the turn of this century, a different world yet again. For them, the cell phone is part of their way of life. And the generation being born today, we have no idea what will dominate their values. I use the word boss as an example of how each of those generations looks differently at the same English word. For some, the older two generations, there is a boss. The boss is meant to be obeyed, must be obeyed. For our generation, my generation, the baby boomers, we think there's a boss who should be obeyed, but we have the right to criticize every decision that boss makes. The generation after us thinks there should be bosses, but they should be your friends. And the last two generations have no idea that there's such a concept as boss, let alone that they should be obeyed. A friend of mine used to say, we're separated by a common language. I think it's a very, very nice way of describing the fact that we each say the same word, think we mean the same thing by it, and actually have very different understandings of it.
And then again, there are not many occasions where all the generations get together at a table where they realize the difference of understanding of words.
And even more sadly, there are not too many occasions when the generations come together and have an opportunity to enrich each other. One of my most beautiful memories is of my mother and my niece having conversations together, separated by almost 80 years in age, and yet very much enriching each other's lives. A very beautiful memory from my own life.
Like in our Mercy Spirituality, we've organized the Intergenerational Forum to give the chance to younger people of the age of more or less 16 and of the older generation to talk to each other, because both of them have more contact with the middle-aged generation, but not with each other. And in New Zealand, many older people have their grandchildren overseas, and many grandchildren have their grandparents overseas. So this is a chance to get them together and to learn from each other, to have a conversation on the same level.
Yes, and I think that's a wonderful opportunity, a wonderful way of reflecting together, and a wonderful way, again, of deepening each other's lives, isn't it?
Yes. And I think that your understanding of different generations, different ways of thinking, I think that's also very important for the church. And as a Sister of Mercy, I think that you'll also see it in that context, that if you talk about obedience or a boss, and things have changed.
Things certainly have changed within our church. And we're a church that's the largest single religion in the world. So we're a very powerful group across many societies. But there are large, more and more members of our church who are choosing no longer to practice. In Canada, for example, we know that fewer than 20% of people who call themselves Christian actually attend church on a regular basis. So even what does the word church mean? Because in that same society in Canada, 90% of people say they believe in God. So how they understand believing in God and practicing a religious tradition differs. All of our groups, I think. It's very interesting, though, in our church where the role of women is only slowly coming into its own, how in each part of our church, in each country where our church lives and breathes, how we're going to be able to make our church really, truly inclusive remains a challenge for us. I love the image from the Second Vatican Council of the Roman Catholic Church where the fathers of the church who wrote those documents said that we are a pilgrim church, and a pilgrim church is always on the way to completeness. It doesn't reach completeness.
It's a journey.
It's a journey. Yeah. And therefore, the church is always in need of forgiveness, always in need of repentance, always in need of continuing to deepen how it becomes a reflection of the reign of God on earth. And that's very helpful. That's very hopeful for me.
I think the pilgrimage is a good picture because the pilgrimage leaves for a certain goal, but he or she has no idea when he or she can arrive.
Exactly. And the journey is so important. The pilgrimage itself is so important, not just the destination. It's a very humbling experience for us as church to come to that place, but it's a very healthy experience for us as church to come here.
You also quoted Pope Francis and his book, My Door is Always Open, or it's a collection of interviews, I think. Mm-hmm. And he mentions the signs of the time and that the great changes in history were realized when reality was not seen from the center, but rather from the periphery. And you had a beautiful picture with it.
Yes, and Pope Francis certainly is a leader in our church who's challenging every single one of us to look at the world very differently than we'd looked at it before, to look at the church very differently, and to look at each other very differently. Because I think he comes from the Church of the South, he has a very, very rich understanding of working from the periphery, not from the center, of seeing where the most vulnerable persons are, not where the most powerful persons are. And that's not the lens we usually go from. There's an interesting image from the United Nations that talks about the amount of wealth in the world and the amount of poverty in the world. And that image, which is very interestingly portrayed as a champagne glass, reminds us that the richest 20% of people in the world hold 82.7% of the wealth, and the poorest 20% of people in the world hold 1.4% of the wealth. And I know I personally am in the top 20%, the group that own the 82.7% of the wealth. There's something desperately wrong with that image. And what's sadder about it is it's not getting better. That gap is not changing. And another one of his quotes, Pope Francis reminds us that that's narrowing that gap is not what we should be doing. What we should be doing is having a world where we all have equal access to justice and food and water and dignity. That really is the goal that we as church need to be working towards.
And you mentioned that I think 20 years after World War II, the world in the industrialized countries at least was the most equal it has ever been. And it was not like that before and afterwards.
And I can only speak for Canada on that. But by the early 80s in Canada, we had a very narrow gap between the rich and poor, primarily because of our quite advanced social policy, both at the federal government level in our country and at the provincial government's level. In the mid-80s, that began to change. The social policy began to change, and the gap began to widen again. So today, the gap in Canada between the rich and the poor is as wide as it was before the Second World War. So we have a lot in our country, which is a very, very good country, a very privileged country. We have a lot to learn about making our world more just and more peaceful.
And I think that doesn't only, it's not only applicable for Canada, but it's many countries in the world who are experiencing similar situations.
Very much so.
And I think in that that situation, people are looking for something. They are looking for some stability, especially if the if you have a huge unemployment rate, especially under young people, among young people. Mm-hmm. They are looking for something, and it's a different world than with their parents being young.
Very much so. Everything has changed in our world. Our way of communicating has changed. You know, young people today, for them, electronic and digital communication, social media is much more effective and important than it would be for me. I'm still a dinosaur. I like to write and speak directly to a person.
And you use the mobile phone as mobile phone.
Yeah, and I actually do use a cell phone, as we call it, as if it were a phone. And my nieces and nephews think I'm quite archaic. and even a text message for me, I send text messages as if I were writing an essay, perfect grammar, perfect punctuation. And when I receive a text message from one of them, I have to read it out loud very carefully to understand what it's saying. So how do I communicate with those generations when I can't even speak the language? And at least I'm getting wise enough to know that that's my issue, not their issue. But I think it speaks much more to the fact that we have to find ways of relating better on this earth. We have so many, you know, Anzac Day reminds us that we thought we fought a war to end all war. Today, many more people are engaged in war than ever before. All over this planet, there are wars happening. And many engaged in those wars are using these social media to gather together the forces, the people to fight the wars. It's just quite tragic that despite all we know, we haven't learned those lessons.
And yet most of us believe in one religion, and we have the golden rule that's always been promoted. And I read it the other day in Cardinal Kasper's book about mercy, where he mentions again the golden rule that is similar. Don't do unto others what you don't want anybody to do unto you. Mm-hmm. And you find that in all religions around the world, in all major religions at least. He didn't compare all religions.
No, and we have in Canada a beautiful poster that illustrates that. It takes 12 or 14 of the major world religions and chooses one text from all their holy books. And all of them are essentially saying the very same thing. And then we humans turn around, and in each one of our religions, we use religion to do things that are wrong, to hurt each other, to go to war. We abuse the holy books that we have had, our tradition has given us over the centuries. And, we need to challenge each other on that. And I think Pope Francis in our Roman Catholic tradition is challenging us on this, that it is not acceptable anymore to use religion, that we have to grow into what we're called to be. The beautiful passage from Matthew 25, I was hungry and you gave me to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me to drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. It's interesting in that passage, it's not you gave to the hungry, you gave to the thirsty, you gave to the stranger. I was hungry, I was thirsty, I was the stranger. And if we really heard passages like that, and every tradition would have similar kinds of passages, if we really heard them and challenged ourselves to live into them, how much better we would be relating to each other and to Earth.
Mm. And we would treat Earth in a better way. And you said something, regarding the dignity of the person and the diversity, and that's also diversity of cultures. We talked about cultures and religions and languages. And I think Elizabeth Johnson, if I quoted it right, you said, the dignity of difference is a source of blessings.
Yes. And diversity is not just about the obvious diversities, the cultural difference or racial difference or ethnic difference or religious difference or political difference. There's also differences in, there are also differences in personality, in how we look at an issue, how intelligent the person is, how artistic the person is, and how often we prioritize which gifts are more valuable and which are less valuable, and how much we miss when we do that, you know, how much we deprive ourselves of when we deny that giftedness in each other. I love teaching. Teaching is my, is the one profession I think that God created that's above every other profession. And I once learned, I once heard and kept it as a mantra all through my own teaching time, that it's always there. You just have to know how to draw it out. And I think that's what teaching is about, which is why I think it's so formative. Every leader has to be a teacher. Every leader has to have the giftedness to draw out the giftedness in the other, to let the other know how good they are.
And as you said, the leader is, can be a leader in a family. It can be a leader in a little group, in a parish group, or it's, and everybody is a leader in a way. And didn't you mention also the baby?
Yes. One of the gifts Pope Francis has also given us is a whole new understanding of what it means to be a Christian. And he calls, he says, every one of us is a missionary disciple. And it doesn't matter how learned we are or how intelligent we are or what rank we hold in the church. Every single one of us, by virtue of our baptism, is a missionary disciple. Now, in the past, we would have said you're a disciple first and then you become a missionary after you've had formation. Pope Francis says, no, that's not the way it works. So that means a 7-month-old baby is a missionary disciple. Now, all that little baby can do is create love around her. But if that's all was ever on my headstone when I die, she created love around her, wouldn't that be the greatest gift I could possibly give?
That's beautiful.
But it also means a 90-year-old father who has dementia is also a missionary disciple. That father was, can just hold one moment as precious, loses it, and then gains another moment. But in holding one moment as precious, gift from God, the person with dementia is also a missionary disciple. And I think Pope Francis is wanting us to understand that, so all life is precious, and all life includes Earth. We understand very soon, Pope Francis is going to give us an encyclical on the environment, on ecology. We're not sure exactly how he will frame it. But that will be, I suspect, another challenge to our thinking of how we've disregarded the beauty of Earth and the place of Earth in all creation.
Thank you very much, Sister Elizabeth. It was very encouraging and very informative. And I think that it's also another way of thinking of our mission in Auckland, in the Diocese of Auckland. Our the pastoral plan is called Fit for Mission. So you finish with the right words about the missionaries that we have maybe the wrong concept in our heads. Thank you very much. And to our listeners, what is coming up in the next weeks or days? On Thursday, 16th of May, Sister Catherine Wiles Pickett will offer a retreat day on Christian meditation. And on Thursday, 14th of May, from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., Philip Hadley will facilitate a workshop on the Ascension. Absence is a special sort of presence. I wish you all a good Friday and a blessed week ahead. And thank you, Sister Elizabeth, for coming here.
Thank you very, very much.